Hello, and welcome to the Dance Medicine Oral History Project, presented by the International Association for Dance Medicine and Science. I am your host, Marissa Schaefer, and on this episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Donald Rose. He has served as the founding director of the Harkness Center for Dance Injuries and has worked as the company orthopedic consultant for a multitude of dance companies and Broadway shows. I hope you enjoy. Welcome, Dr. Rose.
Hello.
Thanks for being here on, I think you're my first interview in my kind of dance medicine oral history series. So thank you for starting us off here. So without introducing this too much, because we have plenty to talk about, I want you to tell us about your professional journey, especially in the dance world, starting at the very beginning.
Okay. Well, I started my journey following medical school by going to, at the time, Hospital for Joint Diseases for my orthopedic residency. And I finished there in 1985, after which I went to Philadelphia for a sports medicine fellowship. I came back and joined, at the time, my two partners, who were at Hospital for Joint Diseases and were my mentors at the time, Drs. Jaffe and Neuwirth. One was vice chairman of orthopedics and the other one was chief of back surgery at Hospital for Joint Diseases. I came back to the field of sports medicine in New York, not expecting, nor did I get any of the major teams such as the Giants and the Knicks or the Nets, or whoever was out there. They were very much established with their medical teams at the time. But being a former relatively high-level athlete and finishing a sports medicine fellowship in which we covered the Philadelphia 76ers and about 120 high schools and five universities, including major sports, D1, I was looking for an experience like that, where I could deal with a high-level athletic population. I had always admired dance, not so much from the aesthetic perspective at the time, although that certainly has grown over the years, but more from the athletic perspective. I always admired what they could do and I could not do. It's certainly something that I had never really appreciated until fairly later in my athletic career, having grown up in the suburbs of New York and not being exposed to dance. But certainly what they can accomplish, and I'm still amazed, I cannot do a single step. I can't touch my toes, despite being at athletic my whole life and continue to be athletic, but I cannot do the simplest of maneuvers, nor can I remember the simplest of steps, even now. So that certainly has not grown. So I always admired them. And when I started in practice in New York, I would start seeing dancers. And then I would start seeing more dancers. Why? Because there wasn't much in terms of coverage for dancers in New York. At the time, they had very little income. Most of them did not have insurance. And when I started to see them, I recognize that not having insurance, even if I saw them pro bono, which I still do at the Harkness Center for Dance Injuries at NYU Langone Health, I didn't have the ability to A, send them for physical therapy, B, for any radiographic advanced study such as an MRI, or C, God forbid, they should need surgery. There was no avenue for them to go. So it became very frustrating. So I thought of forming with Hospital for Joint Diseases at the time, some sort of clinic where we could see them, even though my services would be pro bono, we could see them and regardless of their ability or inability to pay, they can get access to high-level care. I subsequently met up with Mindy Foreman, who people said, well, she was involved in dance. She was a former professional dancer, Modern Company, Jose Limon, who was now a physical therapy at Hospital for Joint Diseases. She was very excited about doing this as well. And we put together about a one-inch proposal, thin proposal at the time. I'm not sure I could do that again, but we certainly put together everything. And that essentially is the framework of what we still practice today. We proposed it to the hospital, and being the typical hospital, if it wasn't going to be in the black, then it wasn't going to happen. And that hasn't changed either over the years. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to me, but was put in touch with them very quickly, was the Harkness Foundations for Dance. Fortuitously, Ted Bartwink and Bill Perlmuth were on the board of that. And Bill Perlmuth was also on the board and subsequently became president of the board of Hospital for Joint Diseases. They, through their avenue of pursuit, wanted to have a dance clinic treating musculoskeletal care at Hospital for Joint Diseases. Well, fortunately, our administrator put us two together, and they provided the seed money for the beginning of the Harkness Center for Dance Injuries. Up to that time, when we had done our research, there was very little that was out there for dancers at the same level that it was for other sports. You had occasional physicians who would cover dancers. The notable one at the time was Bill Hamilton, who is now recently retired, who covered American Ballet Theater and New York City Ballet. But there was very little else out there. The science was really spotty. The practice of orthopedics at that time was only starting to grow. So at the time, you had articles that were written that were, quote unquote, no dancer has ever returned back to dance after an Achilles tendon rupture, for instance.
Wow.
ACL injury was devastating. The recognition of things around the hip were totally unknown. And they would get relatively poor care, and it was few and far between. We certainly owe a debt of gratitude to people like Bill Hamilton and others who did bring science into the field very early, but again, it didn't have access to the general dance population. We found at the time about the level of income, the level of insurance, health insurance for the dancers at that time, and it really needed a boost, to say the least. So we started in 1989, about 31 years ago now, almost 32, the Harkness Center for Dance Injuries, with the seed money from Harkness Foundations, thus the name Harkness Center for Dance Injuries, at Hospital for Joint Diseases. We started very early. We became a clinic within a clinic at the time, where we would be seeing dancers, and we had access to funds, which grew in terms of their number and diversity subsequently over the next 30 years. But we started with funds that we would see the dancer regardless of their ability and inability to pay. And that's where we started. At the beginning, being within a clinic, it wasn't conducive to the dancer to come in and not having a reception staff that really treated them like dancers. And it was tough. We only got about 50% return rate at the time, which wasn't great. So we tried to make it better as best as we could. We became the first clinic at Hospital for Joint Diseases to subsequently move into a private practice type setting. We also became the first clinic that would see a population on a sliding scale. And that was great. I sort of modeled the experience after what I had during my sports fellowship mm-hmm. at Temple, in which you would have an attending see every single patient. They would be preceded by the resident or fellow at the time who would go in, evaluate together with either an athletic trainer or a physical therapist. So everybody would have a great experience. They would come out, present to me, and then we would go over everything. So it became a very educational experience. Mm-hmm. Our tenets at the time for the center was based upon clinical research and education. So obviously we started first with the clinical aspect. In 1993 or thereabouts, Mindy left the Hospital for Joint Diseases, and I had met Mary Jean Lederbach, who at the time, I should say Mary Jean Lederbach at the time, I got criticized for that lately, who at the time was doing sports medicine research at Lenox Hill Hospital under the direction of the Nicholas Institute. She was a former dancer herself and was very much interested in the research element. We sort of met at a symposium that she was running. I gave a talk, she was giving a talk, and I asked her subsequently if she would take over as a program coordinator at the time for Mindy. And thus we started very much skewing into the research and educational aspect. And she has grown into the director of research and education and is now one of my co-directors at the hospital for, at NYU Langone Health Hartman Center for Dance Injuries. So that's where we started. We subsequently had funding additionally from the seed money at the Harkness Foundations from Dance, from various elements, the community chest, various organizations who put up matching funds, where we would have an endowment essentially that would ensure the continuity of what we were doing. Only recently we became underneath the direction of the Department of Orthopedics at NYU Langone Health, but had the pleasure of being separate and independent prior to that. And it has continued to grow. We were sort of a virtual center as we did not really have a place. Our physical therapy was within the hospital system, and then what was in a sports medicine part of a hospital for joint diseases, and that place got condemned, and we subsequently moved back into the hospital. So it was physical therapy within physical therapy. Our dance clinics were within other clinics. So it was always a virtual center, even though it grew to be the largest center in the world that treated musculoskeletal injuries in dancers. More recently, over the past several years, we were able to secure a space finally, which became an independent space separate from any of the hospital institutions or medical center where we now reside in terms of the physical therapy and other clinical aspects, even though we still see clinical clinics within the system at NYU Langone Health, as we need to have access to for instance, radiographic studies such as X-ray. So it's still, we still cannot be without that. And it has grown into what it is today. We have, educationally, we have put on many a course and have hosted the International Association for Dance Medicine Science meetings, which has significantly grown from the beginning when it was only about 100 people attending each meeting to where there are now significant numbers of internationally, and we've hosted that for two or three times, as well as giving us a forum to do our research presentations that we have continued to do regarding dance medicine.
So, okay, a lot of questions. I'm like feverishly taking notes, which I know other people can't see. Okay, to start, that 1-inch thick proposal that you and Mindy put together in, what was that, in the 80s, the late 80s, what was in that proposal? So I'm curious specifically, like you mentioned that obviously you needed to be in the black in order for the hospital to continue to run the system. And then you also mentioned Hartwink and Perlmuth.
Ted Bartwink.
Bartwink, sorry, Bartwink and Perlmuth. And they obviously came in at a very ideal time to help you with all that. I want to know what was in the proposal and like what made it feasible to go forward.
Well, the chief part of the proposal and the initial part was what was available to the dancer. Mm-hmm. What was the financial status of the dancer? And by doing our research, we found that the average dancer made $8,000 a year. Mm-hmm. The average dancer did not have health insurance. What was the number of facilities and where were they that treated dancers? What type of facilities were there? Mm-hmm. So we did a background of everything having to do with the individual dancers. How many companies were there in New York City, in the immediate environment of New York City, mm-hmm. and elsewhere? So obviously New York has always been and will always be the center of dance. They have Broadway, they have every type of dance. They have types of dance that I never heard of before. And even 10 years into the program, I had never heard of. Mm-hmm. So I'm always fond of what we say, we cover ballet to belly. So that was the initial part. Mm-hmm. What was out there, what was available, and what was the needs of the dancers? What was the financial resources? What were the sources of potential income that the Harkness Center or the quote unquote dance center that we had at the time, it was still unnamed, mm-hmm. could get access to? And subsequently presented what our idea was. Clinical, how we would run our clinics, where would we see patients, where they can go, what happens if there was an emergency, where would they go for that? Ideally, for us, the Hospital for Joint Diseases had the first orthopedic emergency room that was dedicated just to orthopedic injuries and musculoskeletal injuries. And we had access to that in the off hours. If somebody should get dance, we can put them into that program and they would be covered under the Harkness Center as well. So things like that were extremely important to us. How many days a week would we have a clinic? How many patients could we see in a clinic? What other resources did we need? There were no athletic trainers at the time.
Right.
What about physical therapy? What was the cost of that physical therapy being pulled out of the physical therapy department and seeing patients in the clinic in which they really didn't see for any money and therefore was not bringing any money in? So there was a lot of financial aspects that made this necessary before we could get acceptance by the institute, i.e. Hospital for Joint Diseases. Mm-hmm. And what research did we need to do? This was based, and we wanted to focus just on musculoskeletal injuries. We knew we didn't have the resources or the knowledge to get into other areas, obstetrical, gynecological, et cetera. But we wanted to also, in our proposal, where would we refer those people to? Mental health issues, sociology issues, et cetera.
Curious if you remember offhand who else was out there when you said what other clinics existed for dancers. I mean, I know you mentioned Dr. Hamilton at NYCB and ABT, but were there any other places that you noted?
There was a few doctors and osteopaths who would see patients, but there was no clinic, and there never has been any clinic that is able to see dancers. Regardless of their ability or inability to pay, they didn't right. have access. So where could they go? It was very rare for them. So they ignored their injuries. And that was the biggest point. The dancer, and to a certain extent, rightfully so, did not have much faith in the doctors and the medical system at that time. So they would suffer in silence or they would no longer dance. And that would be the end of their career. Sure. So what we wanted to do was to be in a place where we could extend that career and allow those people to return back to their passion, if you will, where they never had that ability before. You got an Achilles tendon injury, whether you had surgery or not, that was the end of your career. You had an ACL injury, that was the end of your career. You had a stress fracture, even if it was recognized, that was the end of your career. Labral tears.
Bye.
Arthritis.
Right.
Just about anything. The dancer was afraid of injuries and they would suffer in silence. They didn't want to lose their income. And that would prolong and make worse their injuries. Mm-hmm. And we had to gain acceptance as well by the dance community. It helped to have Mindy, who was a dancer. It helped that when we went out to set up our therapy programs and all the other people that are at the Harkness Center, I'd say 95% are former dancers in various types, from aerialists to ballet dancers. And they all are passionate, which is very important. Every single one who works at the Harkness Center, as you know,
yep,
passionate. They come, they would do it for free. One thing that's great over the past several years is that now we're seeing other areas of medicine become involved with dance medicine more so. And at the Harkness Center, we just had Doctors Barchi and Borowski join us as pediatric sports medicine and primary care sports medicine practitioners. And they add another element to it and are able to see an expanded array of musculoskeletal injuries and have the knowledge to cover more than we could just from the orthopedic perspective. I think when I started out, and I'll never forget, the person will remain silent. Mindy and I went to a very prominent person in the dance community. She was a writer for Dance Magazine, I believe, at the time. And we were told bluntly, you can't see dancers, you're not a dancer. And we sort of looked at, we got done with that meeting and said, here we are offering our services for free.
Right.
And okay. Well, that person, you know, did come to our awards or our gala a few years later and was become a very much of a believer in it. But that's what we were going into.
Up against.
Nobody was, yeah. Yeah, I remember the first company that I ever covered, which was Dance Theater of Harlem about 30 years ago. And I remember seeing a 60-minute piece on Arthur Mitchell and what he was doing in Harlem. And I said, you know, this is great. And I want to be part of that. And I remember giving him a call.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I introduced myself and I said, this is what I would like to offer my services to the Dance Theater of Harlem. And the first question he said was, why us?
Yeah.
So
what did you say?
And I gave them the usual reasons for and why, just as we were talking about. And, you know, subsequently, I came up to Dance Theater of Harlem and met with them. We became good friends thereafter.
Wow.
So, but it was not, you know, you expect that everybody is going, here you offering services for free. And there was a skeptical element from the dance population at the time. I think more so now. Dancers, thank God, because of the educational outreach that we and others are doing on the knowledge and the expertise of the dance community in terms of medical care, there's less skepticism. Mm-hmm. And they are seeking out our medical attentions a lot sooner and therefore became believers, as their friends say, oh, they weren't so bad. They didn't say stop dancing and
right,
or you can't dance anymore or why do you have to dance? Because that was the attitude when I started.
Right.
Oh, you're a dancer. Well, just stop dancing or you'll
that
never be
fly.
Able to dance again.
Yeah.
That wasn't going to fly.
Yeah.
And the treatments that were out there, even in my fellowship, I started out my fellowship with every ACL reconstruction. having a long leg plaster cast applied for 8 weeks.
Wow.
Well, you can imagine not many dancers would survive that.
No.
And still, we do things differently for dancers. It is a very different population from most athletic populations. You don't see iliopsoas injuries in dance, and other than the dance population. Yeah. You don't see os trigonum, or very, very rarely, os trigonum, flexor hallucis longus, peroneal tendonitis. These are rarities in the sports medicine communities, and it's often not recognized. You know, the os trigonum, very simple, very straightforward, flexor hallucis longus tendonitis. You have Achilles tendonitis, and this is what you have to do, and they wouldn't get any better, and the recognition of dance injuries has significantly grown over the past several years, thanks to the research that is being done and the clinical expertise that we and others across the country and internationally now have been able to foster. So this knowledge is out there now, and it's grown. We have a dance medicine and science journal. Mm-hmm. There's more of an acceptance within the sports world in terms of musculoskeletal injuries, that this is a sports population, and quality papers are now being published, and the research is being done. How many can come back? Can you come back? What do you have to do? We do ACL injuries and reconstructions differently from the football player. You know, the quote unquote, where you fix a graft, for instance, getting very technical, mm-hmm. but you fix it at 20 to 30 degrees of knee flexion. That's what the residents are told. That's the right answer on their orthopedic exam. Well, if you do that with a dancer and they even get to zero and they can't get the hyperextension, that's the end of their dance career. Great for a football player where it doesn't much matter, but it's not so great for a dancer. So we fix all dancers in hyperextension, so that they are able to get that hyperextension. And we found serendipitously, well, if it's good for the dancer, it's also good for the football player. Mm-hmm. So we've changed, or I certainly have changed, the way I treat my other athletic population as well, based upon how I treat dancers. Mm.
You helped to shape, our injury culture, so to speak. Question. Speaking of which, so a while ago, you were mentioning that, like, when you guys first opened, you had about a 50% return. So 50% of the people came back in the door. Do you think that had something to do with injury culture as well?
I think part of it was the injury culture.
Yeah.
I think the other aspect was they were treated, quote unquote, in a clinic setting.
Sure.
They were seen at the same time, and the waiting room was filled with people who were chronic back issues, arthritis of the hip, much more elder, non-athletic population. So they would sit in the waiting room and not being treated like and they're not prima donnas by any, that's a misnomer.
Right.
Dancers are the most grateful patient population by far. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't an environment that was conducive to nurturing and have them come back. Once we move to our own sort of private type setting, we now have a return rate of 95% mm-hmm. in this. So it has greatly changed from there. And also word of mouth.
Right.
Where can you go?
Right.
You do get better. You can get better. They saved my career. They did this. They did that.
Right.
They're speaking with physical therapists and athletic trainers who speak their language.
Huge.
You know, what's a tendu? He's saying plie. He's saying passe, développé, à la seconde. Wow, I've never heard a doctor understand these little terminologies mm-hmm. that they're using. And they obviously, quote unquote, understand me as a dancer. They're different. They're very different.
Right.
And it's true for every population. Sports athletes were skeptical too of going to the orthopedic surgeon where there was very little sports medicine involved. When I started 30 years ago, there was very little sports medicine. It was all open surgery. It was very little arthroscopic surgery. You didn't have as much of an understanding of the athlete either. Mm-hmm. So that has significantly gained traction, especially during my tenure, which is long. Mm-hmm. Research has really helped. Basic scientific and clinical research has significantly changed the face of orthopedics. It is no longer an anecdotal profession, which is what it was, especially for the dancer back then. Now we have amazing research to back up or to support or not to support various means of treatment. Mm-hmm. Can you treat this conservatively? What percentage will get better without surgery? What percentage won't? What's the percentage of people who will return back to sports, athletics, and especially dance now after having this? Can they get back? When should they have the surgery? What's the percentage of people who can just be treated conservatively? And it's grown and grown and grown. And I'm still growing. I learn a lot every day.
That's great. Question. So you mentioned calling and getting involved with DTH. At what point, and I know now Harkness does stuff backstage, obviously not in a pandemic, but they get involved with triaging dancers kind of on site. At what point did you start getting into that kind of stuff?
Very early. As much as possible. Once we got the personnel, mm-hmm. We tried to bring, it was difficult for DTH to come to us.
Sure.
We were in the lower part of Manhattan. They were in the upper part of Manhattan, mm-hmm. and the travel was tough. So if they couldn't come to us, we endeavored to go to them. And we very much over the years started to increase our outreach, where we would have people that were on site. Why do they need to come in? Well, there's two things. One is they can be treated on site. Mm-hmm. Two, if somebody had an injury that was just a little bruise, do they need to come in to be seen by an orthopedic surgeon to be evaluated?
Sure.
So not only did we bring treatment, but we also brought a triage system into place as we grew, and we outreached to SUNY Purchase. Instead of coming all the way in from Purchase, New York and Westchester into the city, and they might have a little ankle sprain or something that did not require orthopedic care, why would they spend the 5 hours or whole day basically to come in? They could be triaged on site, and only those that were felt to be necessary to come in and be further evaluated could be done. And that was a big, big, big part of our growth. We cover Alvin Ailey, who, as you know, and they were very instrumental in developing their own physical therapy department within Alvin Ailey. And they triage. And before I would see every dancer who had anything wrong with them, they would take time out of their dance day to come over from the west side over to the east side. And it was a lot of it, 75%, did not require an orthopedist
sure.
to see that they could be triaged by physical therapy on site. And that's been a huge clinical advance for our center to outreach to the community, covering the Joffrey School, DTH, SUNY Purchase, et cetera, et cetera. We cover a huge number of schools now in outreach, a huge number of companies as well. Backstage, we cover a lot of backstage, whether it be Broadway or ballet or modern, and that goes throughout the boroughs of Manhattan as well, where we're able to have outreach, and it's easier for them to be treated on site, and they gain more of an acceptance. And then if they need to come in, they come in. And we're also doing a very big part of the educational aspect of this is injury prevention. Mm-hmm. That's crucial, crucial, crucial. If you're going to get into dance injuries, you need to have an emphasis on prevention. And that's that was the educational arm. And we would go out and outreach and have lectures both at Hospital for Joint Disease at the time, as well as to the dancers and the dance teachers. We would have a dance teacher educational day where they would come in and be exposed to all these things and how to recognize. So there was education of the dancer. There was education of the dance teacher. There's also education of the residents and the fellows who go through NYU. NYU Langone Orthopedic Department is the largest residency program in the country. So together with two fellows, and I think we're up to 14 residents per year, most of those will have at least some taste having coverage in the dance clinic. And they are educated so that at least they could start to recognize these problems out in the community. Physical therapists come from all over to get educational experience with our physical therapy department. They learn and can outreach and bring back. So that was a big educational experience. And then educational experience to the dance medicine world, if you will, happens at the symposiums, which are international now, and obviously by Zoom as well.
Yeah, by Zoom, it's true. This is kind of a bit of a self-serving question. I don't know if you know that I also went to SUNY Purchase. So our paths crossed in multiple ways.
I did not know that, but I should, I guess.
No, well, now you do. And obviously we work together at ALEA as well as Harkness. I am curious, you know, with these institutions that you've been a part of for such a long period of time, in addition to DTH, that's the first one you mentioned, obviously, how did you start that relationship with SUNY Purchase, and how did you start with ALEA, where I know you are beloved?
With SUNY Purchase was very interesting. Carol Walker, mm-hmm. who was probably your dean at the time, mm-hmm. She came in to see me having no knowledge that I had anything to do with dance medicine.
Serendipitous.
At all. Huh. She came in because she sustained a fracture of her, I believe, wrist or hand way, way, way back and needed treatment for that. I think she got it skiing or slipped on the ice. I can't even remember. And I treated her for that. And when I found out who she was, I said, have you ever heard of? And she had no knowledge. Huh. Obviously, she became very interested. And it was a mutual interest, which we still see each other almost yearly now that she's retired from her role. But she wanted to bring us in. And we came and became part of SUNY Purchase.
Wow.
At the time. So that's how serendipitously things happen.
Uh-huh.
Alvin Ailey, to be honest, I have no knowledge of that involved. I was invited by Alvin Ailey to become their orthopedist at the time, their mm-hmm. consultant orthopedic mm-hmm. Doctor at the time. I cannot recall how that actually happened. I do remember the first performance that I did cover. It was actually the memorial service to Alvin. And I had never seen Alvin Ailey dance before that, believe
wow.
it or not.
Wow.
And that was my first entree into Alvin Ailey. And it was their memorial service where everybody came up and threw the roses on the stage.
Oh,
and
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it.
It was incredible. And that was Judy Jamison's mm-hmm. first
entry
as the artistic director. Mm-hmm. So I think that they grew as a staff that became more medically inclined mm-hmm. and they had the financial resources to do that. It was very well run, also serendipitously, mm-hmm. Small world. Michael Kaiser, who is very well known in the community of arts and dance, was their executive director as well. And I had no knowledge he was involved and vice versa. And I think he picked up one of the dancers that just had an arthroscopy. I say, Michael? And he said, Don? And we had actually been in the same junior high school classes.
Wow.
Growing up. So very, very small world. So and it gets smaller every year.
Yeah. Yes, I'm realizing that too. Have you ended up taking a dance class ever? I know you said in the very beginning you can't do a dance move or remember steps.
No.
I
played a lot of sports at a very high level, and one of them particularly, but I never would conceive. I can't touch my toes. I mean, my coaches would have me try to touch my toes because they looked at flexibility. I was not blessed with flexibility. Mm-hmm. That was not one of my strengths. And I get within a foot of my toes, and it's just not something. I can never be a gymnast. I don't have the balance. Uh-huh. I don't have the, you know, I was off a diving board, I couldn't do a flip because I had no idea where I was in space.
Uh-huh.
So these are things that the dancer has. And I have always admired being an athlete, but I will never, ever have or pretend
to have,
to even try to get. I know my limitations, and that's an important thing that everybody should know.
It is.
That's mine.
Right. And you mentioned that in the beginning, which I frankly, you know, admire you saying, like, you know, we wanted to treat musculoskeletal injuries because that's what we could treat. That's what you know, and we don't necessarily have the expertise to go out. But I do admire also, you know, the network of people, you know, working in Harkness that we have developed so that we know who to send the people to.
Right.
Important. What else did I want to ask? Okay, so you keep mentioning research. What kind of research did you particularly get involved in over your tenure?
In terms of research, we do have a research arm that looks at basic science research, gait analysis. We have a force plate. We have one of the world's top gait analysis labs and force plate labs in the country. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the basic research through the research arm. I don't get involved as much with the basic science. I do get involved with clinical research, looking at injuries to dancers. What are the results of the clinical treatment for that? And we have papers out in terms of the evaluation and management and treatment, for instance, of iliopsoas injuries, which are very unique to dance.
Mm-hmm.
Too many dancers are getting hip arthroscopies,
mm-hmm.
Because nobody had ever heard of iliopsoas or knows how to evaluate iliopsoas, because the crossover test can be identical for both entities. I can't tell you how many people, you know, come in and for a second opinion and say, I would like you to do my hip arthroscopy, and I evaluate them and they don't need a hip arthroscopy. They need physical therapy in 99% within 6 weeks or 3 months.
Feel fine.
They feel fine. Yeah. It's great. But the orthopedist out there doesn't know that. The dancer out there doesn't know that. So we did research and we found out what is the best way to treat this, how many recover from this. And then we can say, okay, if you don't only, we have an algorithm, you develop algorithms for the practitioner. If you do not, after a certain period of time, then you get this study. If you are still experiencing this, but do have full strength of the iliopsoas, and you still have a positive crossover or fader test or whatever the technical term is, okay. And you have an MR orthogram that shows that, because there's a lot of false positives out there, as we know, by doing more research into the basic science. Well, if you do have that, well, only if you don't get better over a certain period of time with conservative management, which we always emphasize, only then would you be a candidate for having a hip arthroscopy.
Sure.
Ostrigonum, mm-hmm. We have the largest series in addition to iliopsoas in the world. We have the largest series on the treatment of ostrigonum via a posteromedial approach. So we looked at that. and evaluated, well, what's the success rate? Maybe we don't, we're not as good as we think we are. Well, you know, we evaluated that, and also recently with a purely flexor-hallucis longus release, the surgical management, what percentage get better? What's the average of getting better? What symptoms will they still have? What's, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we have the largest series in the world on those entities as well. And again, getting I'm more involved with the clinical aspects of that, looking at some weird one-offs in terms of injuries that dancers get. But primarily those are the big areas that, where we can make an impact. The treatment for post-operative treatment for ACL injuries is another big thing. We do things differently, physical therapy-wise, for the dancer, as you know, from a physical therapy perspective. And I like to encourage the physical therapy to also to have, well, what's the benefit of treating a certain way? How can we treat? What do you do to treat these things and expand to the physical therapy and athletic training community?
What are some of those one-off treatments or one-off injuries that you can, that you're particularly fond of?
Oh, God.
Or unique, I should say. Which one comes to mind?
There's a couple. There was one dancer from Alvin Ailey, for instance, bring it back to you since you are, that brings it up, who could not externally rotate her. You would hold it there, you would hold it there, and then when you let go, it would drop back. And they had an unusual injury, and indeed wrote a paper on three patients that I had like that. And it was the first first paper that talked about a suprascapular neuropraxia, which is a nerve that innervates your external rotators of the arm. And there was a huge cyst that was pressing on the nerve. And that was always associated with a slap tear, which is a tear of the cartilage or the labrum of the shoulder. And you had to fix the slap tear and evacuate the cyst. If you just evacuate a cyst, which we would do,
it'd come back.
It's a little bit better. You'd have to go and come back. And indeed, in your Ailey dancer, it did come back. We aspirated just to get her through the season. And then we operated, and she came back and returned back to full and never a symptom after that. So it was the first study in the world that had both pre-operative and post-operative EMG nerve conduction studies, as well as MRIs. First study that had that. And it was only a few people. There was another dancer who had a peroneus tertius injury, a laceration, a tear of that, that could not return back to full dance. We just had that accepted for publication. It's a very strange little injury, and ballet dancer stopped her dancing. Well, we operated on her. She went back to full dance after that.
What was the mechanism of injury? Just out of curiosity.
She just had inversion injury to her ankle. It was treated initially as an ankle sprain.
Right.
And when we got an MRI, it showed this rupture of peroneal tertius. So these are unusual things that we see. There was one that I have to say was a good clinical pickup. A dancer from SUNY Purchase who had an entrapment of a nerve that innervates the ankle. She would have pain on the lateral aspect of the ankle, and she got bone scans, everything else. Nothing showed up, but she would have this nerve pain type of pain and pain right on the lateral aspect of the ankle. And it was an entrapment of that nerve as it exited the fascia. Very unusual. I've never seen it before or after. And we just released that, and simple, literally 5-minute procedure, and she went back to full. So you see these one-offs.
Right. Takes a detective work.
It is. It's good. It's basic good, being a good clinician.
Right.
Follow through and being very aggressively conservative or conservatively aggressive. Both aspects are very important.
And obviously collaboration being key.
Absolutely. 100%.
Who are some of the people in your career that you feel like, I mean, a few pop into my mind, like you wouldn't be where you are without them.
Certainly everybody at, during my, training mm-hmm. At the time hospital for joint diseases. I think, one person there, who was one of the fathers of ankle arthroscopy, which I do a lot of and wrote another paper on, treatment for ankle impingement. I did two papers, one for non-dancers and one for dancers, because mm-hmm. there's very high incidence of that, was one of the fathers of ankle arthroscopy named Serge Parisien. Mm-hmm. He was great. My ability to analyze a patient, I learned so much from my mentor at Temple, Dr. Ray Moyer, who covered, he knew nothing about dance, but he was such a great clinician in terms of listening to the patient before formulating what I would do
sure.
for the patient. So I think those two were absolutely outstanding. I think the direction that Bill Hamilton had initially in terms of dance, I spent a couple of weeks in his office, even once I came back to New York as a practicing orthopedist. I wanted to learn from him and get his perspective, and spent a lot of time with him, and he would wax and wane, as he was fond to do as a Southern gentleman. Uh-huh. And he would sit there in the chair and expound upon this, that, and the other thing. I would learn a lot from him. Various tests that I do are helpful. And I think I learn every day from the physical therapists that I have with me. And I started to learn during my training as a fellow. And that's why I brought it back when I came back as a clinician at Hospital for Joint Diseases, to have the physical therapist who would give me insight into what I was doing. How do you treat it? What would you do? Not just say, treat.
Right.
That's, and I'm sure, how many times do you get that as a physical therapist? Mm-hmm. Such and such, please evaluate and treat. That's it.
Right.
That's not great.
Closed door. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, you know, that's making a lot of assumptions, mm-hmm. And it's not right for the patient.
Right. Now, I don't mean to say this as if you are retired, because you certainly are not. But the next question, I should say, but where would you like to see the dance world go next? I mean, you've taken it so far. But in the next 30 years, where would you like it to go?
In terms of the musculoskeletal evaluation or medicine for dancers?
Oh, my goodness. Anything and everything.
Oh, my God.
Just let's stick in the MSK realm, though, I should say. Let's
sure.
Stick, yeah.
So certainly, I think that we have learned so much, and there's been such a logarithmic growth of dance medicine. I want that to continue. I want more, as we see more patients who have a specific type of injury and have new ways of treating those injuries, whether it's operative or non-operative, we need to have more research come out that shows what's the benefits, risk benefits, and alternatives for treatment of all these conditions. For instance, you know, when I going back to our beginning, when I said no dancer has returned back from an Achilles tendon. Well, every dancer who we've treated surgically has come back to a full career in dance, full career in dance, including people who you would know, they're artistic directors of their companies, mm-hmm. And have returned back. And nobody has not returned back, to my knowledge, from that. So there we made switches by learning about ways of managing the post-operative care. We don't put anybody in, for instance, in the long leg cast
right.
for a long period of time. We mobilize very quickly. We don't sit on a lot of other injuries that other people might. We are not, we try to be, like I say, aggressive and conservative, but we need more research, clinical, basic science research, jump training, the ability to evaluate like floors, for instance.
Sure.
Some stress fractures. We will have the largest series on treating tibial stress fractures in dancers coming out. We're just collecting the last of the cases, looking for follow-up. How can we prevent those injuries? How can we treat them? How can they return back to dance? What's the best way of doing that? And I think that's, we just have to continue what we've started and be more scientifically driven in terms of research, and having practitioners that understand the requirements of a dancer. Mm-hmm. Even though, yes, I am not retiring and don't expect to, mm-hmm. I'm still looking for succession of the surgical skills and the musculoskeletal skills to be here mm-hmm. at joint disease, well, at NYU Langone and at Harkness. And as well, I want to see that happen across the country and internationally as we talk more and more. You know, so many people now are treating dancers and are becoming much more knowledgeable. And I'd like that communication to be like what we're talking about now, where somebody can get on a Zoom call and say, Dr. Rose, listen, I have this patient. How would you treat? We do that by phone. I'd like to see that more by Zoom, or even if they have somebody in their office, to have that that advancement of media and science to bring us to a point where they can almost call in at any time. I have this patient. What would you do? What do you think about this? It's very puzzling to me. What's the best way? What tests can I do? Sure. How do I treat this? What is the best treatment? Sure. I have hallux limitus or hallux rigidus. What can I do? Well, you know, I think that, you know, we're starting to put together more videos mm-hmm. of treatment. I was just asked by head of a foot and ankle to do, you guys know it because you've seen it, but how do I tape a dancer's hallux limitus or hallux rigidus sure. that will enable them to continue dance without doing surgery, which is fraught with risk,
right.
And I really resist, but how can we prolong that career by doing simple things like taping? Well, we have to get, I have to get out there and others have to get out there and put it more on the media, like what you're doing, mm-hmm. So everybody has access, not only the clinician, but also the dancer, where they can look on ViewMedi or on what are the other, other media where they can, I'm having a blank, where they can see a video of.
Oh, like how, YouTube?
Like YouTube.
Uh-huh. Okay, great.
I don't know, these newfangled things, you know. but where you can bring a YouTube mm-hmm. out there mm-hmm. and everybody, oh, how do I tape my, and they can be referred to that right. YouTube and see how to do it rather than just be shown by one of the therapists
right,
know how to do it or not.
Takes a while to get into and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And I, you know, sometimes you're not aware that so few people have that ability.
Right.
And that's what I think is important. We have to get that information out there. Simple things like taping and conservative management, simple things like nutrition. We have to get out there on social media, which didn't yes. exist, whatever that YouTube thing was. It didn't exist when I was, we didn't have cell phones back then.
Sure.
And pictures and forget about it. We didn't have all of this stuff. And I think that one thing good about COVID, if there's anything good about it, is it really heightened our awareness and our acceptance of Zoom mm-hmm. and other social media mm-hmm. ability to get out to everybody
sure.
knowledge. And I think that's what I'm looking for in the future, so it can be more of an international thing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, what you're saying echoes what someone else in the field says, whom I really respect, which is, you know, you've done so much work to establish so many protocols and procedures and et cetera. It's time to share it so other people are not reinventing the wheel, so to speak, and we can continue to go upwards together.
Right. And I do recognize that I don't want to leave with a space left behind me. So right. I want there to be somebody that is able to take what I've given and then take it to the next level above and beyond what I've done. And I'm hopeful, and we're in discussions with that actually, hopefully get to that point where, you know, in 30 years from now, when I retire, there'll be somebody there.
Sure. Sure. You're finding the needle in the haystack, I suppose.
It is. Yeah. It is. And it's not easy. You know, somebody who I trust, that has the ability, both clinically and personally, and has an affiliation and a desire and a passion for dance.
Sure. Yeah. Big shoes to fill. Very particular person too. Dr. Rose, thank you so much. Is there anything else? I mean, we've covered so much. Is there anything else that I missed that you want to shed light on?
No, I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think at all. If everybody has not seen my, my YouTube video of my, I don't think it was YouTube. I don't know where it was on social media, my dancing and doing.
Oh, were you doing the, I don't even know what it's called, with the arm thing.
Flossing.
Yeah, flossing. Yeah. You know. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I saw that. I saw that.
If you want to see great dance, it's there.
he has one move. He has one move.
That's it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
My pleasure. Take care.
You too.